Lori Houston's News for the Heart is dedicated to helping you give a voice to your own soul. Our hearts have the power to free us from pain and the struggles that keep us from awakening to our true essence. Join Lori now as we delve into our heart and soul to find the path that will open us to the possibilities and lead us to the life we love to live.
And good afternoon. This is News for the Heart. And today I'm really, really honored to have, well, one of my favorite authors, and it's definitely somebody who's been on a spiritual path and written about. Really, it's such an honor and an incredible journey to be on. I welcome James Twyman. Everybody knows you. You are expanding into a new area, though. I have noticed that you have done some music, but this, what we're going to talk about today, it's between a book that you're actually going to do a one-man show on Broadway, which is exciting. Very exciting.
It is exciting. I'm excited about it. I never thought I would be a Broadway actor. I've done a lot of things, but to be acting on Broadway is definitely a new one.
Right. I mean, it sounds exciting. We have to go through why. But so you're going to be St. Francis Goes Broadway, but the actual play is called Brother, Son, Sister Moon?
That's correct, yeah. And a lot of people probably remember the Franco Zeffirelli film from the 1970s called Brother, Son, Sister Moon, about the life of St. Francis. And that really is based on a prayer that Francis wrote at the very end of his life. It's also called the Canticle of the Creatures. And it was the first thing ever written and published in what we now know as the Italian language. It's a beautiful prayer, honoring and praising God through all the creatures on the earth. And it's a wonderful prayer, especially because most people associate Francis with what's often called the prayer of St. Francis, which begins, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. And I almost feel like I'm hurting people when I tell them that Francis didn't write that prayer. But he did write the Canticle of the Creatures, and it's even more beautiful. So, yeah, that is the name of the musical, Brother, Son, Sister Moon.
Beautiful. And it will be on Broadway February 20th to March 1st.
Yes, exactly. What I'm doing is, well, to begin, I wrote the book, which we'll talk about, Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis. And it's a novel. And in doing a book tour based on a novel is tricky because, you know, you don't want to give too much away. Doing a nonfiction book is easier. So I kind of wondered, how am I going to do a book tour? That was earlier this year. And it was sparked when I saw something on Netflix by Bruce Springsteen. Of all people, Bruce had been doing a Broadway show called Springsteen on Broadway, where he would just be up on the stage telling stories from his life and pick up a guitar, play a song, and it was brilliant. Yeah. And I thought, what if St. Francis were here? What would he share? If he told the story of his life, what would be the music that he would sing? And I began writing this, and I did share it many times on the book tour. And then the invitation came to share the musical in New York. And I decided that if I'm going to do this, I can't just do it in an ordinary way. I can't just go to New York and have a hotel or an apartment. I need to do this as St. Francis would. So what I'm doing, beginning on January 4th, I'm going to be starting in Portland, Oregon, and then traveling across the country, penniless, with my friend Bill Free. No idea how we're getting from place to place, where we're going to sleep, what we're going to eat, any of that. Just in complete surrender and trust, sharing the musical in about 12 different places on the way to New York. And then when we're in New York, we're going to also be doing something really extraordinary, which is every day, because we're going to be in a place that has about 350 seats. So every day we're going to be on the street passing out tickets to the homeless. Free guest tickets to the homeless to come in to be with us in this musical. And then feed them before the event, all of this, just because this is how Francis would do it. He would be reaching out to the disenfranchised. And I don't know if any Broadway show has ever done that before, invited the homeless to come. But that is what we're going to be doing.
That's beautiful. Truly beautiful. You know, reading Giovanni and the Camino to St. Francis. It made me want to go, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can. I bring a group every year.
That's great. I'm. You may see me one of these times.
Oh, good.
I'm almost the age of Anna, so.
But I have to say that now I do what I call the Camino of St. Francis light.
Right.
The light version. Because the last time I did it, which was 2 years ago now, I've done it a few times, but the last time I did the whole Camino, I was walking and I said, okay, I'm never doing this again. This is too hard. It is hilly, and it is not an easy walk for 110 miles. Right. So just a couple of months ago, I brought a group on the first light version, and it was much nicer because we could stop in cafes and drink wine and enjoy the villages and really feel the energy of St. Francis while also getting a good experience of the Camino itself.
Right. So how are you combining the book with the musical? I mean, how is that even? I mean, I see where you got the idea. I love it. I just, how are you doing it?
Good question. First of all, I'll tell you where the book came from. Mm. The first time I walked the Camino of St. Francis, and by the way, for those of who are listening who don't know what the Camino of St. Francis is, maybe you've heard of the Camino de Santiago in Spain. That's very, very famous. Well, there are other Caminos, and this is one that follows all the little paths and small roads that Francis would have walked 800 years ago, going from village to village. And maybe 20 years ago, people began walking this Camino, and I walked it for the first time, I think 8 years ago. And as I was walking it, I began to imagine a story about a woman whose name is Anna, who has had a very difficult life. And she decides to walk the Camino, and she meets this young Italian guy named Giovanni, and they become Camino partners. And very slowly through his stories and just through his way of living, Giovanni helps Anna heal her heart through the stories of St. Francis. And I would play with this story for years. Hmm. And I had actually decided 7 years ago that I was not going to write another book. Hmm. After 15 books, I said, you know, unless there's one that is just knocking at the door so hard I can't ignore it, I'm not going to write another book. But this one did just that. It kept knocking on the door of my mind. And finally, about a year and a half ago, I sat down and began writing. And the fun part of it for me was that I knew how it started and I knew how it ended, but I didn't know anything in the middle. So it was like walking the Camino myself. I had to discover it as I went along, and it was such a beautiful process. So your question is, how do I combine the two? Well, Giovanni tells so many stories about the life of St. Francis in the book. Mm-hmm. And it was, for me, it was a very new, very different way to tell the St. Francis story, a very modern way. And of course, in the musical, it's St. Francis himself telling these stories. Mm. And so the musical begins with Francis coming out and beginning just to tell his story. And then there are probably, I think, 10 different songs in the musical that illustrate it even deeper. So it's like having an intimate dialogue with Francis, him coming back through time to share not only what happened to him then, but how important it is today. Because I really believe that today, Francis is even more important. In fact, here's a little something that you'll enjoy. I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I'm going to tell you a quote that also inspired me that was written by a very unlikely source. He said, "Our revolution failed. It created more atrocities than it solved. What we really needed were 10 St. Francis of Assisi's." Who would you guess said that?
I have no idea.
It sounds like something maybe John Lennon would say, isn't it? Mm. Or maybe a Gandhi or Mother Teresa. But it's not even close, because it was Vladimir Lenin.
Really?
Who said that after the Russian Revolution. He recognized that a bloody revolution was not what they needed. That what they needed were 10 people like St. Francis who were completely 100% committed to peace. He said that if we had that, and this is coming from an atheist, by the way, he knew that if they had 10 people like that, they wouldn't have needed a revolution. And when I heard that, I said, okay, I'll be number 10. Who are the other 9? Because I think that's what the world needs today. The whole world is spinning out of control.
Truly.
Just as it did in the time of St. Francis. And maybe if there were 10 or 20 or 30 people who said, I'm all in, you can count me as one of those, maybe things would begin to change. It's just a theory, but it's a theory that we're going to play out and see if it's true.
Beautiful. I mean, anybody on their spiritual path has definitely recognized St. Francis as, you know, a huge instigator of peace. And it's certainly something we all want to attain. I mean, you mentioned that it's about surrender and trust and gratitude, but it's the journey, mm-hmm. possibly of guilt and shame,
yeah.
towards forgiveness that will ever get us to that place. And you also mentioned that, and I love this, that God can only enter a broken heart.
Yeah.
It's
very, very true.
Yeah.
You know, there's a very dear friend of mine named Rod Cheltem, who I have a community here near Guadalajara in Mexico, a town called Ajijic. It's a community called Namaste Lake Chapala. And we have about 40 people who live here. And our friend Rod just showed up this morning. Rod's such a good example of this because he was a medical doctor and had lost everything. And when that happened, he was almost ready to commit suicide. Mm. He was so hurt. And at that same time, he began to hear a voice speaking into his right ear. And it would just tell him the most beautiful things to help soothe him, including, and this is the amazing part, when he would be in the emergency room, because he was the director of emergency medicine at a hospital in Maine, people would come in. Like one example would be a young boy who had fallen and skinned his knees badly. And his parents brought him to the emergency room. Why they brought him to the emergency room for skinned knees, I don't know. But they thought they were just going to patch up his knees, but Rod heard this voice say, give him, I don't know what the test was, but some test that no 17-year-old would ever need. And all the nurses look at him like, you're crazy. But he listens to this voice that came when his heart broke open. That's the how we come back to what you shared. His heart had broken open. That's when this voice began to speak to him. So he tells these nurses, no, run this. I don't know if it was an EKG or whatever. They're looking at him like he's crazy. Why would we run that? He's a 17-year-old guy who skinned his knees.
Right.
Well, it turned out that the reason he skinned his knees is because he had had a massive heart attack.
Huh.
And if they had not done this test, he would have surely died right there in the hospital. And they saved him. And Rod has story after story like this of being guided in the moment through this voice talking into his right ear, telling him what to do. And so he just showed up here this morning telling these stories. And of course, everyone can relate to having a broken heart. Hmm. We've all had that. And yet these are the most transformative moments when the guidance can be clearest. That was certainly true of St. Francis as well. In the times when he was most alone, was when he went deepest. So it's true. When our hearts are broken open, that's when God can enter and take up residence. St. Francis certainly found that out. And I think it's one of the greatest lessons he can teach us today.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Oh, and by the way, Rod's book, I'll just give a little promo for sure. him, is called When God Calls, Say Yes.
Aww.
So you should check that out.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Okay, so some of the themes. He was known as, and I may not say this right, Poverello?
The Poverello, yes.
Poverello.
It just means the poor one.
Exactly. So let's talk about that, because I think there's a lot of, when people begin this spiritual journey, and a lot of people, you know, they're worried about finances, they're worried people often criticize them, saying if you were a true spiritual person, you wouldn't charge for anything. I mean, this must trigger a lot of thoughts. And certainly it gets explained in the book, and it's very beautiful. But the whole idea of, you know, the poor, the poorest man in the world, also richest because of love, but it just, it triggers a lot of spiritual people, let's say.
In both directions, doesn't it? You have some people thinking that spirituality is all about getting what I don't have, and somehow I'm going to be someone other than I already am. And that's why something like The Secret was so popular, because The Secret really, people like to think that it's the the law of attraction, but they don't realize that it's the ego's law of attraction.
Absolutely.
Because the ego, both the ego and the soul have a mantra. The ego's mantra is I want. The soul's mantra is I am. I am that. It's already within me. But in order to get there, I do have to simplify my life. This is what Francis understood. Francis was the rich kid in Assisi. He was the son of a rich cloth merchant, and he had everything. He went off to war. He was going to be in the Crusades. But he was soon stripped away of all of that. His heart broke open. And he realized the valuelessness of accumulating stuff, or goods, we should say, of accumulating goods instead of accumulating goodness. And that's really where his journey began. And so, on one hand, you get people who think that spirituality is about manipulating spiritual law so I can get things.
Yes.
But then on the other side, you have people who think that I should be poor. Mm. Or like you said, that I shouldn't have to charge for spiritual things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And neither of them is really on, because they both come from the experience of lack. Even someone who is trying to use spiritual law to get all the things that they think they don't have or need, that's coming from a place of lack. People thinking I shouldn't have these things because I don't deserve them, or it's not spiritual, that's coming from a place of lack as well. St. Francis didn't come from a place of lack. He came from a place of complete and total abundance. He recognized that the only thing he really wanted was the experience of his own divinity, and then to share that with everyone. When you experience that, that is the most abundant position you can ever be in. So it's really what each of us is called to. I'm very grateful that I've had a beautiful, wonderful career and have experienced a lot of abundance. But I'm trying to use that abundance to create a community here in Mexico, for example, that people can come and enjoy. I'm not buying fancy cars. I don't need, nor do I want anything. What I want is to share this. To me, that's the most abundant we can be. So it really is asking that question, how can I be of highest service? How can I be truly helpful? And following that, and then all of these other things fall away. I don't have to worry about getting what I don't have or think I need to be poor. You're going to be guided perfectly to where you need to be, where you can serve the highest.
I love that. I love that. I love how you explained it all. I think that that's brilliant, and I hope that people hear it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you know, I remember when The Secret came out, I watched the movie right away, and I had two thoughts. Number one, it's a really good movie. They did a very good job. And then my second thought was, uh-oh, this is going to be difficult, because it presented such a shallow view of what true spirituality is. And that's why immediately I felt inspired to write a book and make a movie called The Moses Code. And the Moses Code was all about bringing it back to the experience of I am rather than I want. And here's a funny story. When we were making the movie, this was probably 10 years ago now. I'd been working on it for about a year. And when it was finished, at least I thought it was finished, it was already booked in about 300 places. It was coming out in about a month, month and a half. I showed it to a few friends in Los Angeles, including Debbie Ford, who you may know, and a couple of other filmmakers. And when it was over, I turned and said, well, what do you think? And they all said, it's okay.
Oh, no.
Which is not what you want to hear. And the funny, well, I said, what do you mean okay? And they all said, well, you have, but it's lacking something. And one of the men said, you know what? He's a filmmaker. He said, I haven't had 2 weeks off in years, but I have nothing going on for the next 2 weeks. And if you want, I can, you and I can work together 24 hours a day for the next week, maybe 2 weeks. And we can pull this together in a way that I think would be brilliant. And it was a very hard decision, but I said yes. And by the time that 2 weeks were up, we had reshot 70% of the film, re-edited 100%, rescored 100%. It was a new movie in 2 weeks, and it was brilliant. And people have watched that and have loved it ever since. And the person who did that with me was Drew Harriet, who is the director of The Secret. So it came all the way back around, beginning with The Secret. And Drew hadn't finished saying what he wanted to say about what this was really. So he saw in the Moses Code the climax of what he started in The Secret. I just love that because it shows how we're always given exactly and who we need to bring these things to the highest point possible.
Yeah, that's perfect. All right. So there's a theme of Anna not really appreciating the word God. And that we've encountered, all of us, as we go through and try to help people. But it's a big theme. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, concepts. Mm-hmm. They're tricky, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah, A Course in Miracles, which I've been a student of for about 26 or 27 years, says that words are symbols of symbols. Therefore, they're twice removed from the truth. And words like God or Christ, these are concepts that we're trying to use to describe the indescribable or to experience something that really is otherworldly, beyond this world. And yet people, maybe they were raised in a dysfunctional religion or had some bad experiences, so they hear a word like God or Christ, and it triggers them. Mm. And so they say, well, no, I don't want to use that word. I want to use another word. But what you're doing is you're just substituting one symbol for another. Yeah. And I mean, I was raised very Catholic. I am a Franciscan now, and I started studying to be a Franciscan when I was 18. So I felt very lucky because I was somehow able to move effortlessly through all the dysfunction of the church and come out in a very beautiful place. There's a very famous line from St. Augustine who once said, he said, the church is a whore, but she's my mother. And that's kind of how I've always felt. And a lot of people, they haven't been able to get there. They'll say, I'm a recovering Catholic.
Right.
Well, what I always say is, well, then recover. And stop living in that wounded place.
Right.
Don't avoid these concepts that are, dive into them, you know, because they're just concepts. And there's richness if you can move through them into a more open space. So ultimately, it doesn't matter what words we use. If you don't like the word God or Christ, well, then use something else. But don't run away from them. You know, when I find something like that, I run toward them because I know that's where the highest growth is going to be, not by avoiding something that makes me uncomfortable, but by seeing why it makes me uncomfortable and what I can do to heal that.
Yeah, the path not everybody wants to take, though, right?
Yeah.
We understand relationships are, you know, the key to assisting us to grow, but we still, you know, we guard that broken heart. We feel we have to protect it when the heart is the most powerful vibration in the world. I mean, it's the most beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It can't actually be broken, but it needs to open.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's where we find our love.
Yeah.
And where we find our love, we find ourselves. There's a great quote in A Course in Miracles that says, "Teach only love, for that is who I am." For that is what you are right now. You are that love. And so when your heart breaks open, that's, you know, it may not be fun at first, but if you stay with it, the love and the healing that pours out is so far beyond anything of this world. And it's that experience we're seeking. We're not here to get more concepts. We're not here to learn things intellectually. You can study this stuff for lifetimes and never really have the experience, or you can read one line and something opens inside you that takes you out of this world altogether. That's what happened to St. Francis. But it was when Francis decided that he could no longer travel the road he was traveling, just being an ordinary person seeking after the riches of the world. He wanted to see if it was possible to do what Jesus said, to really live the gospel. And here we are 800 years later talking about him still. Because Francis lived at the end of what we now call the Dark Ages. Mm. I don't think they called it the Dark Ages back then. They probably called it something else. But now we look back and we see how dark it was. But what people often don't realize is that right after the Dark Ages came the Renaissance, a time of great creativity. And Francis was a major contributor and inspiration to the Renaissance. So what I'm thinking and feeling, and maybe others are as well, that we're living in a kind of dark age right now, where these shadowy, fearful images are surfacing one last time for one huge gasp of air before they can finally be healed and a new Renaissance can be created. And I really think that that's what Lenin was referring to when he said what Russia really needed were 10 St. Francises.
Right.
Well, imagine if there were 10 people like that on the planet right now, or 10 Mother Teresa's, or 10 Gandhi's. I mean, maybe that's what will initiate a new Renaissance and bring a new era of light. That's what I feel. And if anyone wants to join me, meet me in New York.
Yeah. Yeah. So God is to love one another without conditions. Mm-hmm. It's something that sounds so simple, mm-hmm. but is not easy to live.
Right.
To see Christ in everyone, to see Mary in everyone, to love unconditionally and accept everyone for who they are, it's challenging. It's something we strive for, but do we really strive for?
Right. Well, we could talk about this one all day long.
That's
a big subject. But what it comes down to, the foundation of everything you just described comes from the experience of guilt, the idea or the belief that I did something and now I deserve to be punished. Now, this is not something that we feel like we did as a baby or as a child. This is something that happened way before that, at the very core of our being. Most religions call it the separation or original sin or whatever, you know, each tradition refers to it. But it's this idea that I'm guilty rather than innocent. And therefore, I project that guilt everywhere I look because I don't want to deal with where it really is, which is self-guilt. But the way it's healed in both places is by realizing that there's nothing that was ever done that I should be guilty for. That the idea of that separation, the fact that I could be separate from God, in reality never occurred. This is what A Course in Miracles calls true forgiveness, that the sin that I thought I had committed in reality never happened. Then I can begin to release that guilt. And when I begin to release that guilt, I begin to love myself again. And as I love myself again, I no longer project guilt onto you, but I project forgiveness onto you. And that's when unconditional love starts to take hold, because I'm no longer I'm no longer placing you outside me in my dream to make you guilty, because I can't deal with the guilt where it really is. So this is very esoteric and very metaphysical, but it really just comes down to the simple fact that there's nothing that you ever did. You are whole and perfect as God created you. But that's an experience. And that's really what every religion and spiritual path is meant to bring you to. Now, not all of them do. Some of them do it better than others. But that's the experience that we're coming to. And the interesting thing is that when you're a mystic, it doesn't matter what religion or tradition you come through, because they all lead to the same place. They all go to the same core. The mystic who is Jewish or Christian or Muslim, they're all the same. Mm-hmm. Because they've gone to the heart of what love really is. And once again, back to Francis. That's what Francis experienced. And so someone else that we should mention, because I hate to talk about Francis without also talking about St. Clair.
Right.
A lot of people don't know about Clair because her life was much quieter, but she is an essential part of this story. Clair was the feminine counterpoint to Francis. She was the first woman to give up everything and come and follow him. And that was a very big deal, because Clair and her family were the closest thing to royalty that Assisi had. So when Clair left everything and gave everything to the poor and then began to follow Francis and become a nun, she was one of the most powerful people in Europe, even though she never left her convent. There were at least two stories of when Clair saved Assisi from total destruction, from armies, because of her prayer. Wow. Popes and kings and leaders would come to her convent to seek her counsel. So in some ways, Clair was even more powerful than Francis. But because she was a cloistered nun, we don't hear so much about her. But these two together, the masculine and the feminine, coming into perfect balance, I think that's why we're still telling this story 800 years later.
Hmm. Yeah, I read it in the book, but you're right. I didn't even bring it up because it was, but it's a beautiful part of, I think, what we all have to go through. We have to balance both the masculine and feminine, but it's more than that. Like, it's like opening up to just allowing it all to just be. We try to put definitions and labels on everything when it's just the surrender part. And I think, you know, when you talk about surrender in the book, which is a theme, it's a hard one, because, you know, there was a point where they talked about obedience, where Anna, you know, kind of compared what Giovanni was asking her to that of, you know, a cult. Mm-hmm. And he talked about where a cult is, you're surrendering to the teacher, where God, you're willing to surrender everything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. To surrender to guidance. Because like my friend Rod, the story I told you before, mm-hmm. of the doctor, we all have that. We all have, maybe it's an angel, maybe it's the Christ, maybe it's you. Maybe it's you whispering into your own ear, that you that never really left heaven. Because that's what I think the real fact is. I am the Christ. I am that. And so and that has nothing to do with my identity. That's not James. There's no such thing as James Twyman. What a silly idea that is. But beyond all of that is who I really am. And that's what's whispering into my ear or your ear or Rod's ear, reminding us of who we really are. And that's what we're called to be obedient to that still, quiet voice that reminds us that we never really left heaven.
Right. And the intuition that we all have, we have to be very quiet. Otherwise, the ego, which I love how you described as the two-year-old crying and trying to get its way, because that's really
right.
You already mentioned it prior with the law of attraction and the secret, but it's still worth saying. I mean, we give so much more voice to that that thing that we want and need and try to control and manipulate. And yet we get so upset when someone tries to control and manipulate ourselves. But, you know, that gentle voice, whether you hear it in outside of yourself or within yourself, it's that's what we have to listen for. That's what that's the key to hearing, because it's always about love. There's never a time when you're into it. I mean, yes, we have the gut intuition that may, you know, warn us about things, but that gentle, quiet voice, that it's always about love. Everything's always perfect. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't trust it.
It really is. we don't trust it. Yeah. But once again, that brings us back to the experience. And you could call that experience the peace of God, or if you have a hard time with the word God, call it something else, whatever you want to call it. Just know that it's an experience that's beyond words. It's beyond all concepts. And when you touch that experience, you know it, because it is so far beyond any definition or the intellect. And at that point, I stop trying to get it and let it get me. You see, that's the difference. I surrender so that it gets me. I'm not here to figure it out anymore. I'm here to let it figure me out. And all I need to do for that to happen is to get out of the way so that love can find a way. And that's the experience. And we could look back through time and find so many saints and sages and teachers who have had that experience. But none of them, anyone who has had that true experience, they're not saying, come and follow me, I can show this to you.
Yeah.
That's the sure sign that they haven't had the experience, in fact. It's a teacher is simply one who, if you imagine standing at the bank of a lake, and the teacher is pointing to a spot in the lake, and beneath the water, there's a fish. And apparently the teacher can see the fish, but he can't. All he can do is point to the spot. Now you have to let your eyes and your gaze soften. That's something you have to do on your own. So obviously a teacher or a guru, they have a role to play, but it's not to take away your power. It's not to do it for you or to say that you can't do without me. It's just to point to a spot in the water so that you can then let your own eyes soften and see what has always been true.
Nicely put. I think a lot of gurus out there tend to think that they can do it for us, and that is a bit of a problem.
Oh, it can be. Yes, indeed. We've seen that throughout history, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, so another theme is the energy part. Certainly when she went on that slab that was supposed to be a bed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's about, you know, finding that divine spark within you, which is really about your intuition, which is really about everything we've been talking about. It all fits together. It can definitely be most magical, especially if you've never felt it before, or if you forget, which as we go through life, we tend to forget a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important. Yeah. I mean, it's that piece where, you know, are we feeling St. Francis's energy? Are we feeling our own energy? Are we feeling our, you know, goddess energy? These are the questions that we ask, that we think, you know, it's something outside ourselves instead of that divine spark within.
Yeah, the story you're referring to, it's a hermitage called the Eremo de Monte Casale. And it's a beautiful, beautiful, very old Eremo or hermitage where St. Francis used to visit. And on his way, walking from Assisi to Liverna, where he spent a lot of his time. And you go to that Eremo today, and you can climb up these very steep stairs, and there's a slab of stone, which is where Francis used to sleep. And I've been there probably four times now. Mm. And people always climb the stairs and they put their hands there. And in the story, Anna lays down and to her great surprise, feels this rush of light and energy come into her. This is very confusing because she's done everything she can to avoid God and Francis and anything spiritual all her life. and yet she's feeling something. And it's this beautiful Franciscan who helps her to realize that you're feeling something that's in you. Maybe there is a residual of Francis's energy, but all it's doing is sparking something that's within you. And that's the important thing with all of these tools and teachers and, you know, spiritual paths. It's already in you. And there may come a catalyst that sparks the memory of that which is within you. But that's all that's happening. We have to realize that everything you need is already there. Mm-hmm. There's nothing for you to gain. There's only that which you need to discover and awaken and realize. And that's why this is really ultimately a very simple journey. But we've invested so much in avoiding that simple journey. All we need to do is to relax and realize that there's only one thing I want. I want the peace of God. If I can just let everything else go and know that if I focus on only seeking the peace of God, all these other things will be given to me easily and naturally. Francis was a great example of that, but there have been many, many more throughout history. Mm. But for me, you know, doing this musical, the gift has been when I put on the costume or the habit, I feel like I become that, and I get to live from that for a while. In fact, what I'm going to be doing on the tour for that month and a half that we're traveling across the country toward New York is when I begin in Portland, when I start that first presentation, from that moment on, I'm going to stay in character of Francis for a month and a half in my mind, thinking like Francis, acting like Francis, not telling people I am Saint Francis, obviously, and I'm not making a show of it, but in my mind to transform that, much as a method actor would do making a movie. Take someone like Daniel Day-Lewis. When he played Lincoln in Spielberg's film, for that 8 or 9 months that they shot, he was Lincoln the whole time. He never left character. Every night, his wife slept with Abraham Lincoln. To the point, I heard that when they finished shooting, it took him probably 3 days to get his Irish accent back.
Oh.
He went so deep. And that's what I'm going to be doing with this character. But it's not really Francis that I'm imitating. What I'm really doing is I'm imitating what we'll call, and this may be one of those words that triggers people, but the Christ that's within each one of us. I'm not talking about the Christ that was only in Jesus. Mm. You know, Richard Rohr likes to say, Christ is not the last name of Jesus, unless it's your last name as well, because the Christ is within all of us. All the Christ is, as is defined beautifully in A Course in Miracles, it says the Christ is the extension of the love and the loveliness of God, also known as you. I've always loved that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me to enter into that and stay in that the whole time, it's going to be very fascinating to see who ends up at the end of this trip to New York.
I'll say.
And by the way, if people want, they can watch the first 20 minutes of the musical anytime.
Oh.
If they just go to Jimmy Twyman, JimmyTwyman.com, right there on the very top, there's a link that takes you to another site for the musical where you can watch the first 20 minutes that was performed in Assisi just a few weeks ago.
Nice. I will put that link on the on our interview so that people
great.
Can go. Yeah, that's
Thank
great.
Thank you.
Okay, so lastly, let's talk about happiness. It seems to be that, I mean, there were some beautiful examples of how, you know, St. Francis had everything, but was never happy. And his goal was to become happy. I think that's everyone's goal.
Mm-hmm.
But often we're looking outside ourselves, like The Secret. It was very much greed-based and pushing us to look outside ourselves like we need the better car and the bigger house and that kind of stuff, where really that's never going to bring us happiness. And that's probably partly of the poor man. That's that way to bring it back to, you know, it he didn't need to find happiness by becoming poor, or if that's what he did. But it was more about, well, it's more about letting go of everything. But he was able to find joy even when he was abused and attacked. And that is a great symbolism of how, you know, it's easy to be happy when everything's going how we want it to be, that our ego is happy. But much more difficult when we're at a Thanksgiving dinner, or, you know, when our family is triggering us because we still have our things to go through. So, yeah, happiness. That unattainable or attainable, it just, it's the choices we make. It's how we get to choose how we respond.
I think in order for us to be truly happy, we have to strip away all of those layers that we have accumulated or piled onto us to, or thinking that we need more of this, more of that, to be happy. We strip away those layers until we come down to our essential self, which is what happiness is. And we ultimately come to this point of realizing I need nothing, and I need do nothing, because who I am, the truth of who I am, is completely sufficient. But we talked about that original guilt before. And because of that, we have been fooled into believing that in order to be happy, I need to get more stuff. I need to accumulate more goods rather than realize more goodness. And this is why so often you see people who are profoundly rich, who are really the poorest people we know, because they're not happy. They're always striving to get more, because even if they're a billionaire, it's still not enough. But right here in my neighborhood in Mexico, there are families all around me who are probably richer than even these billionaires, because they're happy, because they live from a simple place of joy, knowing that their families, the simple things that they find in life fulfill them. I would rather be like that than to be a billionaire who's miserable or thinking that they need more stuff even though they have everything. So it's not as elusive as it seems. We sometimes think that being happy is so hard to get. No, it's not. All you need to do is what St. Francis did. Maybe not in the same way, but in one way or another, you need to let yourself be stripped to that essential self, which is what happiness is, where it lives, and just realize that I need do nothing. I don't need anything. I just need to stay there and give it away. Be the source of that. That's the other key. I like to say it needs to come to and then through me. It's not just about coming to me receiving something. I now need to be the source of that, right? Yeah. I need to imitate, you know, what is perfect, and then I need to extend or to radiate, imitate and radiate. You know, this is the key. I need to not only receive this, but give it away. Because I'm only giving it to myself. Like the prayer of St. Francis says, it is in giving that we receive. It is in loving that we are loved.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds so simple. It is simple.
Well, you know, there's a song in the musical. Maybe I could sing just a tiny bit of it.
Ooh, I'd love it.
It's probably my favorite song in the whole musical. And it goes like this. Be like a child today. Don't overcomplicate what's simple. Oh, so simple. Love's power in you is strong. You don't need to wait so long. It's simple. Oh, so simple. I do believe that you can finally see what I've tried to get you to understand. It isn't hard to see what has always been true. If you take my hand, just take my hand. Be like a child today.
I love it. That beautiful innocence.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect. Well, James, this has been a lovely, lovely interview.
Thank you.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. You've certainly got a lot of things happening, and I think, you know, I would definitely love to go on the Camino with you at some point.
Well, people can just go to my website, jimmytwyman.com, and get on my email list so I can let you know not only about things like that, but also you can watch me go across the country on the tour. We'll be sending out updates on that and little videos. And also you can see where I'm going to be, you know, if I'm coming near you on the way to New York, because I'll be in Portland, Santa Barbara, Phoenix, Sedona, Santa Fe, Taos, Kansas City, St. Louis, Peoria, Chicago, Cleveland, Philadelphia, Whoa. Boston, and then New York.
That is quite the trip.
It's going to be quite the trip. Yeah. So if I'm anywhere near you, I hope you can come and say hi.
Okay. And we will definitely look up that link so that we can see the first 20 minutes. Is there anything else you'd like to, I mean, that seems to be your website, so we'll make sure that people have that. Is there anything else that?
I don't think so. Okay. I think we covered a lot of ground. Just let it be simple.
Yeah.
Don't like the song says, don't overcomplicate what needs no complication.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you so much for this beautiful interview. You've been listening to News for the Heart. We've been getting to the heart of what matters with James Twyman. He's got some interesting things happening. If you haven't read the book, definitely get a hold of the book, Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis. Definitely take part if you can at the Brother Sun, Sister Moon Broadway show. Very exciting. Thank you very much, James.
You're so welcome.
Have a question for Lori and want to be on the next News from the Heart show? Drop us a line via instant feedback at bmajor.org. News from the Heart is brought to you by Intuitive Soul and is produced by Major Radio for Clear Channel's iHeartRadio and bmajor.org.